On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, you're On the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, we have an attorney from Houston, Texas, Mitchell Cateen, who just won an amazing award, and we're going to find out about it. I don't think it happened overnight. I think he's been going on with this for a while. So he represents homeowners and HOA, so he understands both sides of the issues. So that's good. So we're going to talk about that. Mitch, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about your recent win.
Well, the recent win had to do with a lawsuit brought on behalf of about 12 homeowners against a homeowners association here in Houston. And actually, the condominium association is located near NASA. It's called the Landing Council of Co-Owners. And that's a condominium association which used to be comprised of about 17 buildings. And I say used to be because, as you will hear in greater detail, the association, through its board of directors, demolished all of the 17 buildings. So as of today, there's nothing out there except the land. All the buildings have been demolished by a demolition company, and the buildings are no more.
Now, there were, what, you said 150 units?
Correct.
And do these, did you have families living there?
Oh, sure. You know, they're just like in any condominium complex, you had a mixture of rental units as well as units that were the primary home for families and single people and retired people, and it's a normal condominium complex, or was, and so you had a variety of different uses as far as that. It was on the water, on the Clear Lake area. There's a lake that's near Galveston. And so it was very nice property. A lot of the condominium units were waterfront property. There was also a marina that was part of this. And so the cause of all of this drama had to, originated with a hurricane named Hurricane Ike that hit the Houston and Galveston area in September of 2008. And that is what caused some damage to the Landing condominiums and started the whole series of events of what had to happen. And, you know, it's not every association has handled a casualty loss. Some of them have, and casualty losses are things like hail damage, fires, tornadoes, and hurricanes, and I guess in some places earthquakes. You know, natural disasters that damage the common property to some extent. And in this case, it was Hurricane Ike in September of 2008. And so I have been involved. I've been a lawyer for 27 years handling homeowner association matters. I'm located here in Houston. But I represent both homeowners who have problems with associations as well as associations in their regular day-to-day activities and, you know, collecting assessments and enforcing deed restrictions and things along those lines. And so I do both types of community association law. And some people wonder how I can do that, because a lot of lawyers just represent one side or the other. And my philosophy has always been that when you're enforcing the governing documents, or enforcing the property codes or whatever laws are governing the situation, it's the same law. The same rules, the same laws apply, and they don't change whether you're representing the board or representing the homeowner. It's the same law, and so as long as you are fairly and correctly interpreting and applying those governing statutes and rules, then you should be okay. So that's what I've always done, and that's what I continue to do this day.
And I think when this morning when we were talking, I said that you sound like the fair lawyer, because you're just fairly representing everything.
Well, I try to be, and a lot of times I'm very pleased that a lot of my clients tell me, it's very nice of them, that they tell me that I sometimes change their opinions of lawyers in general, and that's a very nice thing.
That's a difficult thing to do, Mitch.
It is. But you know, there's good and bad people in every profession, and so I try to do things properly and correctly. And you know, sometimes, you know, in all fairness, there are boards that although they're not authorized to do certain things, they think that it's something that should be done, and they try to do things, but that's wrong. Their authority and their power comes from the governing documents or the statutes that apply to their type of community association. And no matter how good they think it is, I mean, for example, a common thing is some boards think that they can evict owners who break the rules. And I have to say, well, that you know, for example, somebody who's a drug dealer, and they try to say, well, we're going to evict that drug dealer. So, well, you can't. That's their home. It's not. They're not a tenant. You know, that may be a good thing for everybody, but you just can't do it because you think it's a good thing. You gotta follow the rules, and that is really what sums up this case dealing with the hurricane damage. Is there were rules to follow, and the jury found that the board of directors did not follow the condominium declaration, they did not follow the condominium bylaws, and they did not follow the Texas property code statutes that deal with hurricane damage and how insurance money is supposed to be used, etc. We won. The jury came back and answered every question that was presented to them the way that we had asked them to answer it, and that was that the board and the association failed to follow the law and the governing documents.
Let's start from the beginning, Mitch, because you told me that you had actually three cases.
Correct.
And we still haven't given the grand total, the amount of the win, and I want to get to that.
Okay.
But start from the beginning. You had Hurricane Ike and you had some damage, and then what happened?
Well, there was a dispute early on as to the extent of the damage at the condominiums. Yes, some of the condominiums were damaged, but many of the condominium units had actually no damage, none at all. And just like in many hurricane situations, the electricity went off, the water went off, etc. But just as you would expect at your home, that should be a temporary situation, and those services should be restored as soon as possible, and they usually are. Well, in this situation, none of the utilities were ever turned on. The electricity came on briefly, but the city of El Lago and the board of directors never took the steps necessary in order to have any of the utilities restored to the property. ever. And so the homeowners who were living in the landing condominiums were never able to return to their homes after Hurricane Ike. And
because of the utilities.
I'm sorry?
Because of the utilities.
Because of the utilities and the city government. It's a small city. El Lago is a small town near NASA. And the city had issued a couple of statements that the property was dangerous or uninhabitable. And really, one of the problems that my clients had, and I represented about 12 or 13 homeowners, along with other attorneys, such as Andy Taylor and Gregory Cagle from Austin. One of the problems we had is we just really did not feel like the board of directors pursued trying to get the property back in order and up to shape so that homeowners could return. Instead, it appeared that the board of directors simply acquiesced to what the city was doing and went, they thought that what's best for everyone is let's just try to maximize the insurance and not repair the property. And that's what they did. And our clients, did not want to just get insurance money. They wanted their homes. They wanted the property to be repaired. And a very critical factor is that in the declaration, the condominium declaration that governed casualty losses, the board of directors was supposed to hold a meeting of the owners within 40 days of the casualty loss for the owners to decide whether they wanted to repair the property or not repair the property, kind of if it was two-thirds damaged or not. The owners were supposed to vote. The association scheduled the meeting proper, or they scheduled it timely, but canceled the meeting because the notices were not sent out by certified mail, a technicality. And instead of calling the meeting quickly thereafter by certified mail or whatever they wanted to do, they waited for almost a year until they called this meeting. And when they did, after a year, if you can imagine, after a year of the properties becoming, you know, with mold and deteriorating and no electricity and people being out of their properties for a year, you know, that's a really different situation to try to get people to vote after a year instead of within the 40 days like the declaration said. So another group of homeowners formed, and they hired me. It was a Texas nonprofit, unincorporated association of owners. And we filed a lawsuit, a declaratory judgment lawsuit, that simply said that the association had waited too long to hold this meeting. It was supposed to be within 40 days, and they waited a year. And we filed that lawsuit, and a judge agreed with us, and he issued an injunction to stop this meeting. And eventually we got all of our legal fees, and that was the first case. The second case, then the association started getting some insurance money. And in the second case, the association started spending the insurance money. The board had suspended collecting assessments from all the owners.
Okay.
So even though the bylaws and declaration talk about collecting assessments, they said, look, they've had a hurricane, they're out of their places, so we're going to not require that anybody pay any more assessments. So they didn't assess or collect any assessments from the homeowners, and so they started using up all their reserve money, and eventually they had no money left, and so they started using the insurance proceeds for operating expenses.
Oh,
And so another group of homeowners got together and they hired me, and we filed another lawsuit to say, you're not following the law. You're not supposed to be spending insurance money on, you know, fencing and electric, you know, whatever it is you're spending it on, lawyer fees, et cetera. This is insurance money. The insurance money is supposed to be used to rebuild the property, and if you're not going to rebuild the property, the insurance money goes back to the homeowners and follow the statute. They still, remember, did not have a meeting to avoid repairing the property. So we filed some lawsuits and, again, won different TROs and injunctions, and the judges said, look, you got to follow the law. The law is the law, and it applies to everybody, and you got to follow it. So early on in that case, we had a number of victories against the association, simply requiring them to follow the law. And then we were going to have a big hearing one morning. I can remember this. I was getting dressed in my home, getting ready to go to court, and I turn on the TV, and what do I see on the news? What do you think? A fire. The condominiums are burning down. And they were on fire. It was amazing that I, you know, said, look, that's the condominium, and I had a hearing this morning on it, or I'm going to it. And so there was a fire. They never caught whoever set the fire.
It was arson, though.
No, there was never any. There was never. I mean, I don't. The cause is still unknown. Let me just put it to you like that. The cause is unknown, and I really don't know. You know, it's hard to say. It was just a coincidence that the condominiums caught on fire the night before this big hearing we were going to have in this case the next day.
Wow.
And you can imagine how exhausted my clients are. They're fighting the board, they're fighting the city. You know, the property is not being shored up correctly. You know, they want to return home, and all of these roadblocks are being put up, and now a fire. It's like a disaster after disaster. It was really exhausting for everybody over the, you know, 3 or 4 years this thing went dragged on.
Wow.
And, but anyways, you know, that fire really did change a lot of things, because now to go back and try to repair that property was even more difficult. The board had not done anything to repair from the hurricane damage, and now to make matters worse, we have, I think there were two buildings that were completely destroyed, and two other buildings had water damage from fighting the fire. So 4 buildings out of 17 buildings were damaged by the fire. And so at some point in that case, the judge, it was a second judge, that the judge and the parties just said, you know, now, and the board was having other meetings. Now that they had another casualty loss, they had another meeting, and they got a vote to say, you know, not to rebuild. There are some questions and problems associated with that meeting. I think, let me look at the, I have the jury charge here. Let me see.
While you're looking for that, you're on the Commons out of Fairfax Radio, and we're talking to Mitch Katine out of Houston, Texas, who just won a huge case, and we're getting to that. So don't you dare go away.
Well, one of the questions the jury answered, the jury question was, do you find from a preponderance of the evidence that at the Article 12 meeting of co-owners conducted in January of 2011, that's after the fire, less than 67% of the co-owners voted in favor of finding that more than two-thirds of the project required reconstruction because of the fire. And they said yes to that. So that means that less than 67% voted, so that means that the property should not have been terminated, and it should have been repaired. So you know, the jury was really great, and we can talk about juries in a little bit. I'll finish the factual story, then I can tell you about these different cases involving juries.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
But the second case was basically dismissed. The first case and the second case were both declaratory judgment cases. We won the first one. The second one was basically dismissed after the fire. And then approximately 12 or 13 homeowners said, look, you all, and then after the case was dismissed, then the board had the property completely demolished. All the buildings.
All 17 buildings, not just the ones that were destroyed, right?
Or
not
correct. Just that's a really important point. All the buildings, whether they were damaged or not damaged, were completely destroyed and thrown away. So all that's out there is a vacant lot where the buildings used to stand. And the homeowners that we represented felt that the board and the association did not have the authority. They did not do it right. They did not follow the governing documents. They did not follow the law. And they wanted compensation for the loss of their condominium unit. And that's what this case that just got resolved a few days ago was all about, is they wanted the value of the property that was destroyed. And so we brought this case. It's been going on for about 2 years. And we presented all of this fact, very technical, detailed information. Both sides, the association fought hard. They argued that, you know, they argued that the board of directors and the association should just use their best judgment. And, you know, their argument was, well, we don't really have to follow the declaration. If we think it's in the best interest of all the homeowners, we can do what we want. You know, these are exceptional circumstances. It's a hurricane, and the declaration just doesn't cover this type of catastrophe. And they were wrong, okay? The declaration is set up to cover this type of situation. The requirement to have a meeting of owners is in there with a time limit because that is what the developer intended. In the first case, the reason we won that first case, the judge said, well, it's there for a reason. You know, it's there for a reason. If it's there, you should follow it. That is one of the fundamental principles of homeowner association law, is follow the documents. And when you don't follow the documents, then you get into trouble. You're in violation. Now, the law does provide certain defenses, but none of those defenses were asserted as far as presented to the jury. The simple question to the jury was, did the association violate or fail to follow the declaration and bylaws? And the answer was yes. And
I want to interject something really quickly and take you off on a tangent here.
Sure.
I was in court just sitting in, listening in on a court case, when one of the attorneys representing the association tried to tell the judge that the covenants were a living document and they were guidelines and just suggestions, but the board could do what the board really wanted to do. You should have seen the judge. I thought he was going to jump over the bench and come and get her.
Yes.
It's a living document, Your Honor. You don't have to follow it to the letter.
Well, that's not – there are some things that are ambiguous from time to time. I have another case, and the whole issue in that case is who owns the attic. The attic, ATTIC, the all of the governing documents don't mention it.
Yeah.
The Texas law doesn't mention it. I represent the homeowner, and we're arguing that the attic is part of his unit. And so that's another case for another day. But usually, especially when your documents specifically address the point, If the documents don't address the point, if it's silent, you know, there might be some room for ambiguity or interpretation. But in this case, they had a whole section of what to do after a casualty loss. And we thought, and the jury agreed with us, they needed to follow what the document said. And they didn't. Not only didn't, but they went to the extreme action of tearing down 17 buildings.
How could they do that, Mitch? How could they evict, which they must have done, evict all of the people in there, the owners, to tear down the buildings?
Well, they didn't evict them. When you turn off the utilities and the water, they let the homeowners come back, but they couldn't live there. They were effectively evicted.
Oh.
That's true. They were allowed to come back in at their own risk. But, you know, after a few weeks, these units by the water, after 3 or 4 years of these units sitting there with no water or electricity and subject to the elements, it's, you can imagine, it just got worse and worse and worse. And the worse it got, then, you know, the homeowners one by one started saying, well, I guess we'll agree with what the board wants to do. What are we going to do? You know, these are getting terrible.
That's how they did it.
Yeah. If you don't take care of the place and it just got worse. So the jury did agree with us on everything. We got a jury verdict of over $1,200,000 in actual damages, and the jury awarded us $53,000 per person, which totals approximately $615,000 in legal fees.
Wow.
And it's the biggest verdict I've ever gotten in a homeowners association case. And what was really encouraging, you got to understand that these clients have been through this for 4 or 5 years. And it's really hard as an individual. The association is using the insurance money to pay its lawyers. But these individuals who are suffering the hardship as individuals, having to pay for their own lawyers out of their own pockets, it's really hard to do that for 4 years. And so this the jury agreeing with every question we asked. They answered every question the way we asked them to answer it. It was just an emotional, that day, it was just an emotional validation that everything that we were doing was what we should be doing, and the board did not follow the law or did not follow the governing documents.
I have a few questions for you.
Sure.
Number one, what is the value of the properties?
Well, they varied. You know, condominiums have different values depending on the size of the unit.
Yeah.
There are different sizes. In this case, some of the units included a boat slip, and some of the units were on the water versus others that were up closer to the shore. So different units had different values, and we had our damage expert go through and do an appraisal for each unit as if it had been repaired, and those were the damages that the jury gave. So each person got a different amount depending on their unit.
So some condominiums you're going to run into units that are in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. Some are $1 million, $2 million, $10 million.
Oh no! These are all under $100,000.
Okay, these are under $100,000 and less.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, I know that there was a lot of really high drama in the courtroom, and we talked about that very briefly. And you said you would talk about it.
Well, I did. I when I was doing closing arguments, I got very emotional. What was infuriating was the defendants for the association, the association's lawyer, when they did closing arguments, they were calling our clients names, like our clients had done something wrong. They had accused our clients of of misrepresentation and not telling the truth and what was it, abuse, that we abused them in some way. And I just got so upset. And the other thing is the opposing counsel was a father and son team, and they were talking to the jury about being the father and son, and that this was the last case for the father to try, that he was an older gentleman and that he wasn't going to be trying any more cases, things that really weren't relevant to the case, but they were, you know, it was trying to be emotional with the jury to try to persuade them, I felt.
I hear he's a former judge, is that correct?
That is true.
So they're arguing on the emotional stuff, this is our last case, give it to us?
Well, that's how it could be interpreted. And, you know, then we're getting up because we are the plaintiffs, we make the last statement, and what I did, I shared at the closing argument with Andy Taylor, and what I did when I got up, because I just couldn't let them get away with that, and so I said, you know, I appreciate the comments that the prior counsel made about being father and son, but I want to tell you about my father. My father was a court reporter his entire life, just like this lady sitting next to me here, taking down the testimony, and he worked really hard, and he put me through law school. And unfortunately, my father could not ever see me practice law because he had passed away before I tried my first case. And I'm crying and getting all upset. And I said, but my father put me through law school, and he told me that he was doing this for one reason. And that reason is so that when I became a lawyer, I could fight for the little guy. I could fight for the underdog. And when a bully comes around and treats them badly, that I should stand up for them and I should fight for them. And ladies and gentlemen, that is what I'm doing in this case. These are my clients. And if anybody was abused, they were abused. If anybody was mistreated, they were mistreated. How dare them claim that the, and I just got, oh, I was shaking. I was literally, my legs and arms were just, it was just, I was shaking, and my clients are all crying in the audience because they're all there watching. And it was just, you know, and I'm looking at the jury, and I'm really, you know, I really felt connected to those people. And they were extremely attentive. They listened for 2 weeks. This was a 2-week trial all about condominiums. These people must have learned more about condominiums than most lawyers know about condominiums.
Probably.
It was very technical, but it was also very basic, you know, and what was hard for them is you had very different allegations. One side was saying, well, they didn't do things right, and the other side is saying, well, they didn't do things right, and it was just really difficult. And they never indicated, the jurors, by their expression or body language, which side they were for. You know, we really couldn't tell. They were all very attentive. The judge was very good and fair. And it was just really hard. So they went out and they took a day and a half, and then they came back, and again, without any emotion, they rendered a verdict, and the verdict was 100% in favor of the homeowners. And I cannot tell you, again, lots of tears, lots of excitement of finally somebody telling us that we were right and that the board did not follow, the association did not follow the rules that were in place to protect. I mean, that's what the rules are there for. It's not a majority rules. You got to follow the rules. You know, one of the fundamental principles of homeowners associations is you buy your property based upon rules that are recorded, and you have to live by them, and so does the association. And if either side does not follow the rules, that's what the courts are for. And that's how we really sum up this whole case.
Well, I have to say that I think your father's probably very, very proud of you, looking down on you now. We need more people who are willing to do what you're doing, so thank you. Thank you for fighting the bullies, really.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, I can't imagine 150 people being displaced.
Right.
Because the board decided. So what happens to the land? I mean, what?
The land is for sale. The land is for sale for $7 million, I guess. 5 million or 7 million.
Who gets that money?
Well, the money should be distributed to all of the homeowners. But, you know, the part of what we told the jury is, you know, money is nice, but some of these homeowners will never again be able to have their own home, certainly not by the water.
Yeah.
And that's what they wanted. They want, you know, when you have insurance, you fix the damage, and whatever's left over from the insurance payment, you give to the owners. And that's what we wanted is, you know, yes, this money belongs to them too, but they wanted the board to fix their homes. And then, you know, go ahead, get a big insurance settlement. Great. We all get insurance, and then we fix it, and if we can save some money and keep some of the money, okay, that happens all the time. So, but these homes are gone, never to be rebuilt.
Why did the board want to do that when clearly most of the buildings were intact?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I actually don't have an actual answer for you as far as what I know. I can tell you a couple of things that are suspicions. And one of them is before the hurricane, there was a dispute as far as whether the property should be sold or rebuilt. And so part of the theory as to why this all happened is a lot of the people who were on the side of selling the property saw an opportunity to sell the property, to get insurance money instead of rebuilding the property. In other words, before the hurricane, there was a group of people, there was a committee and a group of people to try to sell the property, and that actually didn't succeed. So then the hurricane came, and they say, aha, now we can try to accomplish what we couldn't before. We'll take advantage of a hurricane. We'll argue that the property is more damaged than it really is, try to get a lot of insurance money, and get this property sold like we wanted to do before but couldn't do it before. So now we'll do it. So there's a lot of different theories. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are some people who felt that demolishing the property and getting insurance money was the best thing, but the problem is that's not what the law or the governing documents say should have been done. That should have been a decision of the homeowners, according to the documents, within 40 days of the hurricane, and that never happened. If that didn't happen, they were obligated to rebuild the property, not just let it go into disrepair to such a point and then a fire occurring to say, oh, well, I guess there's nothing else we can do now. Look how bad it is. They should have acted quickly and promptly to get that property back restored, just like you or I would do with our home. You know, we get back in our home. We fix our property.
Yeah. Do you think that the homeowners are going to collect on this award, or is there another? Do you think?
Oh, I think that we'll collect. I think we'll collect on the. You mean the judgment?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just so you know, a judgment has not been issued yet. The way that this works is we have the jury verdict, and in the next few weeks, the judge will take that jury verdict and apply the law and enter a judgment. Hopefully the judgment will be similar or identical to the jury verdict. But a judgment has not been entered yet. That'll happen in the next few weeks. And then after the judgment is entered, there is the question of appeal. I mean, all judgments can be appealed. Hopefully this will not be appealed. And hopefully we will be able to collect this judgment. And there's different ways and ideas as to how that would occur. That's not really appropriate to go into right now, but it is our desire and intent to collect upon the judgment.
And so it's not technically over with yet. The fat
it's
lady
not,
hasn't
that
said.
Is, that is, there are a number of other hills that need to go. First is we got to get a judgment. Second is we have to see if there's an appeal. And third is how to collect the money. But we're happy with the way it's going.
I'm excited. I think this is great. I never saw that many numbers after the first comma. So I'm really, really excited about that. That's neat. Congratulations
well,
again
thank you.
And again.
Thank you. It's really the perseverance of our clients willing to stand up for what they believe is right and just really hold on to that, especially in the face of a lot of mistreatment and name calling. I mean,
it's
you know, they would go
it?
To board meetings and annual meetings, and people would make fun of them and call them names and threaten them. I mean, it's really hard to be in the minority and just standing up. You know, my family, I have 2 10-year-olds, and we like to say that we want to stand up for what's right, even if we're the only ones standing up. But that's really hard to do in the real world.
Yes.
When you're just a small group and you have the larger group treating you badly and not wanting to listen and not wanting to do things right, it's really hard. And I give them a lot of credit for the courage to stand up. And that's what makes this jury verdict so nice, is these 12 people who don't know either side listened for 2 weeks and said that we were right. And that, you know, what a wonderful judicial system we have as far as that goes. It's a shame that it costs so much money and takes so long to get here, but it's still those 12 people gave 2 weeks of their time to help us determine that we were correct.
I think, you know, you were talking about the abuses by the board and everybody else. That mm-hmm. seems to be something that happens across the board. Just about every association where there's a conflict, and I hear from the homeowners, when they go to the meetings, the boards write these horrible things about them in the newsletters. They abuse them verbally, physically. That, you know, the stuff that goes on in these HOAs is just unbelievable.
It has to do with power and resources and control, and it is. It's really a shame. You know, I am a true believer in allowing people who have a different point of view and a different idea and a different opinion to speak. I mean, because not everybody agrees with me, and I live in America, and I don't want anybody to tell me to shut up and sit down. If I have a difference of opinion, I should be allowed to express it without fear of all these bullying tactics that so many times happens when you have a minority point of view. And it's a shame. And I wish there was some way we could change that.
We're talking to Mitch Katine, an attorney in Houston, Texas, who just won a huge award for the homeowners. Mitch, you said you talked about jury selection and juries. I think there's some interesting observations that you have there. You want to share them with us?
I do. It's really interesting. Over the last few years, I've had about 3 or 4 jury trials involving homeowner associations. And, you know, when you pick a jury, you have the opportunity to speak to jurors and let them speak back to you and tell you their experiences and their feelings. And I am convinced, and you know, I know you're far away from Houston, Texas, so I don't know if what I'm going to tell you is a national trend or a national feeling, but I will tell you here in Houston, Texas, most people really have a negative feeling about homeowners associations. But in that same vein, a lot of people here in Houston, we don't have any zoning. We have no zoning. And so the only way for you to stop a Mexican restaurant or a gas station from being next door to you is to have deed restrictions that regulate the use of your property. So deed restrictions are very important here to maintain residential neighborhoods and other things like that.
When you think about it, you know, if I was going to build a gas station, I wouldn't go and stick it in the middle of a residential area because I wouldn't get the traffic. So, there's certain locations that make economic sense.
Well, but we do have areas where there are no deed restrictions and no zoning, and we do have homes next to businesses that are not appropriate. And so without the zoning or without deed restrictions, those things could occur. I don't know if you're proposing, remember, I see both sides of this picture.
Right.
I don't know if you're proposing doing away with all homeowners associations and doing away with all deed restrictions, but let me just tell you the opinion of the jurors that I talk to, the term that they use for homeowners associations are necessary evils. That's the term they tell me.
Yeah.
Necessary evils. And quite frankly, that's the same term they use for lawyers. Necessary evils. So I don't take it personally. I understand. And the way that I understand that is what they're talking about is associations that are unreasonable. Associations that go overboard in doing what they're supposed to be doing, instead of taking appropriate action. So when I am representing my associations, I try to use that level of reasonableness to, before I send a letter or before I file a lawsuit, I try to think, what would a jury think? Is this really warranting this action? And if the answer is no, then we don't do it. You know, in Texas now we have legislative mandatory payment plans, mandatory ways in which payments have to be applied, mandatory rules about books and records and attending meetings. 2 years ago, the Texas legislature really changed all of these laws to require associations to be more homeowner friendly. And those laws have now been in place for 2 years, and it's working. And the message to associations are, be more reasonable. Be more neighbor-friendly. That doesn't mean you don't enforce your deed restrictions. That's part of your job. But you can do it in a way that is much more palatable and friendly to your neighbors. If I may, I'd like to just give you our website, because we do have information on our website for people we have research papers and other things on the website.
Okay.
It's www.lawkn.com. That's like Katin and Netchman. Lawkn.com, if anybody would like to go to our website and read more about the things that we're talking about.
I'll make sure that I put it in my promo as well, so people can access it from my website.
Thank you.
And that would be good. No, I'm not suggesting that we get rid of all zoning. I would have no problems getting rid of all homeowner associations. Again, there's a difference between a homeowners association and a condominium.
Right.
But the homeowners association, sometimes they're there not for the homeowners, but it's a form of double taxation for the local municipality. And because we do have zoning ordinances. And,
right.
You know,
okay.
I think Houston's the only place in the country that I know of that doesn't have them. So the reasoning in Houston is, well, we have to have associations, because if we didn't, we'd have nothing.
That's true.
But where you have zoning, and then they just shunt all the responsibilities over onto the association. Pick up the trash, maintain the roads, provide recreational facilities and all of that at a separate fee, but we're still going to collect all our taxes, our property taxes.
Mm.
We're just not going to give you anything for those property taxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do pay property taxes here. They primarily go to fund our schools and city government and city services. But, you know, homeowners associations here deal primarily with the common area, the pool and the landscaping. And for townhomes, you know, the assessments go for maintaining the exterior of the properties, just like condos.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but I don't think they're going away anytime soon here in Houston. But I certainly hope, and I think most associations know, that they need to act more reasonable, because now their actions can be reviewed by a judge and a jury, and I think hopefully through this judgment here that's getting a lot of publicity, it sends a message to associations that they need to follow the rules for everybody.
Well, it's interesting because there have been several cases recently where the homeowners have won. And I think the trend for years has been the homeowner loses, associations can pretty much do what they want to do. But I've noticed just lately that the trend seems to be turning, the tide seems to be changing and mm-hmm. shifting more in favor of the homeowners, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. 2 years ago, I won another large jury verdict against an association that totally ignored. It was dealing with replatting their property and the ability to change a property line. And the defense of the association, in light of the express language right there in the documents, is, well, nobody's ever done this before, so we didn't want to start it, even though it's right there in the documents. That was their excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, you know, people need to read the documents and follow them.
Yeah. No, I think that with a real government, you know, the Constitution applies, and they sort of have to protect your rights. In an HOA, that seems to go away.
Yes.
And
yes.
You have to go to court, and it's really hard to find a Mitch Kateen in every city.
Well, you know, judges here are all elected, and I represented a family that we fought for their little potbelly pig named Wilbur, and we won that case. The Homeowners Association said that this family had to get rid of their little baby pig,
uh-huh.
and because it was livestock. And we filed a lawsuit. We sued the association under the declaratory judgment action. The judge allowed all the TV cameras into the courtroom for final arguments. And in the end, the judge ruled that Wilbur was not livestock, that he was a pet, and was able to stay with his family. And a few weeks later, the Houston Chronicle wrote a huge editorial supporting the judge and saying, this is an example of associations going too far, and we're really glad that Wilbur got to stay with his family.
What's funny, I got into Toastmasters because of a pot-bellied pig, so...
Oh, really?
I did. And, Mitch, we're almost out of time, but I can't thank you enough for, first of all, for taking the case and working so hard on it, and for standing up for the underdog, basically, and stopping the bullies, and then for taking so much time out of your day to share that with us.
Well, I think it's important for everybody to understand that I think there's room for homeowners associations. They just need to act properly and reasonably and follow the same rules that they expect the homeowners to follow.
I think it'd be okay if they just limited themselves to maintaining the common areas or do what they're supposed to do. But when they start going into garages, when you start getting fines for having a hose that has not been approved, then I think they're getting beyond ridiculous.
Mm.
But that happens all the time.
Really?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It really and truly does, unfortunately.
Well, let me know if I can ever help with anything. Feel free to get back in touch with me. I know that this area is not going away, and I think things are improving throughout the country, and that legislators are giving more power back to the homeowners.
I think that's a good thing, and maybe one day you can come back and talk to us about a pot-bellied pig. I would love that.
Excellent. I'd be happy to do that.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect All my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.